Are you looking to give your immune system a boost? This is Dr. Ronald Hoppen with a natural solution from Future Farm Botanicals, liquid wild oil of oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's wild oil of oregano supports a variety of health benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate wild oil of oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. Future Farm sources this product from the Mediterranean and produces it in the United States. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. We're answering your questions. Radioprogram@AOL.com, the destination for questions. So what's coming up?
We've got an email from Judy. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. In your opinion, is organic virgin olive oil with the label California Olive Oil Council better than non-organic olive oil with that label? Anything organic is going to be better than its non-organic counterpart. That would be number one. Or does that label mean anything? I heard Costco's organic olive oil is good. What are your thoughts? It's important to go organic.
You know, I think it's kind of a morass. And, you know, we've talked on the program to an expert from my favorite olive oil, you know, the olive oil hunter, who really knows the business. And there's a lot of sleight of hand in the business. There's some outright fraud. There's some cases where olive oil isn't even really olive oil. It's like olive oil mixed with inferior oils.
Like sunflower
and
oil.
Then the question is, you know, are some people flying under the radar of certification? They claim it's extra virgin, but it's easy to just slap a label on and put it in a fancy bottle.
Yeah.
So sourcing is important. I have to say that, you know, big companies like Costco have a lot of exposure marketing products that are organic if it turns out that they're not really organic.
Yes.
And, you know,
and organic laws have changed too. If it's more than, you know, it's got to be 51% organic just to call it organic now.
Okay.
It's almost like the label on trans fats. If it's less than half a gram of trans fat in that cookie, we could say trans
so
fat free.
So could be 49% non-organic?
Possibly. Oh, these rules keep changing.
Yeah.
So more and more our food is being tainted and we're not being told.
That's kind of crazy. So, well, you know, one thing I'll say about place like Costco, just because they're cheap and discount and they sell in bulk, doesn't necessarily mean that they're bad.
Yeah,
because,
that's true.
You know, I think they've come a long way in terms of introducing healthier alternatives. I think you can get conventional and, you know, super discount stuff along with high quality stuff in some of those places. And they certainly have the volume so that they can make it cheaper. They can buy, you know, and source massive amounts. Same thing with, you know, big outfits like Whole Foods. Whole Foods doesn't even make a pretense of being inexpensive, though.
Yeah, that's true.
AKA whole paycheck.
Whole paycheck, yes.
But, you know, so I use myfavoriteoliveoil.com as my source for olive oil. And, you know, I think I will reserve this question for, you know, maybe the next time I talk to, you know, our...
That's a great idea. I'll tell you, so Judy, the only time that I'm not going to look for organic olive oil is if I'm living on the island of Crete or a blue zone like Ikaria, and my olive oil farmer down the road is pressing some fresh.
Right.
I'll go with my mason jar and get some from him.
So issues of concern is one, freshness, you know, because it's a fruit.
Yeah.
And it's got a volatile... antioxidants in it, which don't, you know, weather temperature and light and aging that well.
Yes.
You want freshness.
And the fat can go rancid
and
otherwise.
The right storage characteristics.
and, you know, you want it in a dark bottle, and you want to buy relatively small quantities. I mean, if you have like some, you know...
Unless you're drinking this like stuff and you go through a liter of it.
Of, you know, which is like your economy size for the year. That's
Do you remember
not the,
way the to big tin containers of olive oil? I remember this in my family.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, back after they got over using Wesson oil. Oh, my goodness, the damage we've done. Anyway, the big tins of olive oil that they come home with, it's like, whoa. And it would be there for months and months and months there in the cupboard, you know, under the sink when they take it out and use it, splash on their salad or something. But
I mean, and the other thing is the aroma is important.
Yes.
And I don't like the, I mean, some Americans like the really purified olive oil, which has no aroma, which is almost flavorless.
Yeah.
Because they can't, they find the taste is too overwhelming of olive oil.
Let's remind people what they have to do to the olive oil to get it that light. And they have to deodorize it.
Yeah.
And they have to bleach it.
Right. Super filter it.
Should you ingest this stuff at all?
Well,
I don't think
so. They're also getting rid of some of the important constituents.
Yes.
The things that give it aroma and coloring are things that are beneficial, like hydroxytyrosol and oleuropein. Yeah. So these are...
A good quality olive oil will be fruity, will have a distinct aroma, and will bite you in the back of the throat.
Yeah.
A little bit of heat.
Like a little bit of tang.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you're a connoisseur.
Oh, my God. Oh, gosh. I'm tasting it as we're talking about it.
Yeah.
So, Judy, always organic rather than non-organic, but, what you know, unless you live in
And extra virgin.
Extra virgin.
Never
first cold press.
Never even been kissed. Never
exactly.
Been out on a date.
That's right.
Right.
That's
okay.
Right.
Okay.
Pure as the driven snow.
Okay. Unsullied.
Unsullied. Exactly. Oh, thank you for that question. Okay. We've got an email from Joyce. Joyce is wondering about the missing part where it concerns her husband.
Hmm.
Is it genes? 73-year-old male, not overweight at all. He has high cholesterol, type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, and he's only gone up 1 inch in his waist size since he was 20 years old, over 50 years. That's great. He's been working out with weights and aerobic exercise for over 50 years, and for the last 20 years, he's been eating correctly, at least according to Dr. David Katz's book.
Mm-hmm.
So, is it genetic for him?
So he has diabetes and hypertension?
And hypertension, mm-hmm. high cholesterol,
right.
And he's following a mostly plant-based Dr. Katz type of diet, which is not the antidote to diabetes, I'm afraid.
Could work.
It could
something.
Work. It could work.
But from people who have that gene, which predisposes them to carbohydrate intolerance...
Right.
You know, it's like having plenty of whole grains and, you know...
Right, which is what Dr. Katz is espousing, having plenty of fruits and vegetables, beans, whole grains, all of that. That's not necessarily the diet for a diabetic. Not all those whole grains, anyway. Not any grains.
Right.
It's the most carby-heavy food group.
Yep.
So we need to avoid that.
Yep.
So it could be that.
So you would prescribe, you would tell him to eat as if the flour mill had never been invented.
Exactly.
No pasta, no bread, maybe even a grain-free diet, a paleo
grain-free
diet.
Go easy on those potatoes. Don't have... Over type 2 diabetes means you're not eating all those carbs.
Mm-hmm.
It's that simple because you have a condition of carbohydrate intolerance. So we need to knock back all those carbs out of the diet. That would
and
be
And then,
it.
You know, here's the other thing.
Yeah.
Let's... step away from diet for a minute. You know, these people are presumably somewhere in the industrialized northeast of the United States, you know, New York, New Jersey. And there's a lot of pollutants. And,
yes.
You know, so he may, you know, he's, what, 70-something?
73.
He grew up in the era of leaded gasoline.
Right.
There's also the possibility that, you know, he has cadmium exposure. Some of these things actually have been implicated in... hypertension and in blood sugar abnormalities.
And atherosclerosis, too.
Yeah. You know, that's something worth looking at. You know?
Right, yeah. Where do you live?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So that's something. So Joyce, it may not necessarily be a gene. Maybe he's on the wrong diet.
Yeah. Well,
because I've looked at Dr. Katz's diet. It's very healthy. It's all whole food-based diet, mm-hmm. but not necessarily one indicated for type 2 diabetes. Mm-hmm. That's my only issue there with it. Otherwise, yeah, a whole foods diet is always the way to go. Is always the way to go. He needs a consult.
Yeah.
He needs a consult.
No, because if it was straightforward, you know, people would just listen to this and, you know, everybody would get well.
Right.
Which we hope is the case, but not always.
Right, right. So, best of luck to your husband, Joyce. Thank you for that very thoughtful question.
Good point, which to pause, because we allow our sponsors an opportunity to share a vital message with you.
Do you want to reduce stress and get better sleep? I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman with exciting news about an effective non-drug solution, the Zen by Nuvana. It's a safe, easy way to reduce stress and anxiety, improve your mood, sleep, and focus naturally. Zen is state-of-the-art. It connects to patented earbuds and uses your music to safely and conveniently deliver electronic signals that stimulate your vagus nerve, a major communication pathway between the brain and most major organs. The Nuvana app links Zen to your mobile device using Bluetooth so you can easily control and customize your experience. Choose from a variety of signal patterns to find what works best for you. Zen is safe, easy, and effective. And for a limited time, get 20% off the exclusive Intelligent Medicine Bundle. For more information and to order, go to nuvanalife.com/Hoffman. That's Nuvana, N-E-U-V-A-N-A. nuvanalife.com/Hoffman. Stress less. Focus more. Sleep better. Electronically. The Zen by Nuvana.
Thanks for listening and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. So we are deeply indebted to them. And now back to questions. What's next, Leila?
We have from Valerie, I'm wondering if it's possible to catch COVID from someone who was newly vaccinated. I've heard that at least one of the vaccines gives you flu-like symptoms for a day or two. I assume people who experience that would stay home. But what about vaccinated people who are symptom-free? I may be wrong about this, but I have a vague recollection of hearing that grandparents should stay away from grandkids for a few days after they receive one of the regular childhood vaccines, like chickenpox.
Mm. Well, that was in the old days. You know, they used to have what are called live vaccines, live attenuated vaccines, which actually would give you the virus, but in a form that was milder. And this is actually based on a very ancient proposition. Edward Jenner is one of the first people who administered a vaccine. I think it was in the 1700s, because, you know, even in the period of the Revolutionary War, there were vaccines against smallpox. Smallpox was the scourge of its time.
Yeah.
And you know, popular, you know, celebrities. I think Catherine the Great of Russia, I think, might have taken it, you know,
wow.
And to exemplify to the populace that it was safe. There was a lot of vaccine distrust then.
Mm.
And what it would do is they found that milkmaids developed a milder form of smallpox called cowpox from the udders of cows,
mm-hmm.
but that it gave them resistance to smallpox. So what Jenner did is he did some scrapings from the udders of cows that had cowpox and distilled it into a vaccine, which then conferred, but it was a live virus.
It's so, almost like, it's a little bit homeopathic.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
And homeopathy was very popular then.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit like take a little hair of the dog.
Right, you know, right.
So anyway, so now vaccines are very different and they're not live entities. They're just fragments of, in this case, RNA. Most of the vaccines are now based on an RNA platform. And it's not a living, it's just it's information. It's
mm-hmm.
not a living entity.
Yeah.
So you can't, a person who gets a vaccine can't give, it doesn't get, I mean, they might feel a little sick, they might
yeah.
have an immune reaction, but they don't have a live, you know, they don't...
Transmissible.
But what's interesting... This is interesting. The question kind of leads into another big question mark about the vaccine.
Hmm.
Is the vaccine, they say, is like, whatever, 90% effective, 94% effective, hold my beer, 95%.
You know,
it's like very effective. But
yeah.
what that means is that you can still catch COVID-19, but you'll have a very mild case. What is not clear is whether this max vaccination will prevent transmission. In other words, will you be still infectious? Will you be less infectious?
Yeah.
Will you be not at all infectious? We don't really know until we've tried it out in the field under normal environmental conditions. So what they can't claim, and none of the vaccine manufacturers are making that claim, is that this will prevent you from giving it to somebody else. It prevent you from getting very sick.
Yeah. Yeah.
95% of the time. Will it prevent you from catching COVID? Not necessarily.
Yeah.
You will catch it and you will tame it very quickly, but you might still transmit it. But it's an impossibility with any of the vaccines that are now under development that this will somehow give somebody else COVID who hasn't been vaccinated.
Right.
There's also, I think implicit in this question is what happens if they give the vaccine to your kids and then, you know, they come home and they can give you something. They aren't going to give the vaccine to kids.
No, and they shouldn't.
Well,
because they're not.
It may trickle down to that, but they don't have high priority right now.
Interesting.
Because kids have such a mild form of this that it may be better for them to get a native. The other thing is immunity from a natural infection better than the vaccine protection? That's not clear yet either.
Is it really not clear? Really?
Yeah. I mean,
it's so no measles parties, no chickenpox parties, like when I was little.
You could get arrested.
I didn't plan the party. I was little.
No, I'm talking about, you know,
I know.
COVID-19 parties. I mean, that's actually, I think there were some documented cases of them doing that at college dorms. They were just saying, let's get it over with, you know, party hardy,
Right, yeah. Oh, my goodness. So is it possible to catch COVID from someone who's newly vaccinated?
No, simply no.
Simply no. Okay. Valerie, there you go. Okay. And let's see here. Our final question, Dr. Hoffman, about vitamin D and the microbiome. Apparently, there's an article. Study reveals connection between gut bacteria and vitamin D levels.
Well, just let me say, suffice it to say that any article that is entitled Study Reveals Connection Between Microbiome and Fill in the gaps.
Yes.
Would be true to some extent.
Right. Okay. And that's how they got their grant money.
Right.
Let's talk about gut microbiome.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, my goodness. A University of California, San Diego researchers and collaborators recently demonstrated.
They do a lot of good microbiome research at the University of California, San
Diego.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Recently demonstrated in older men that the makeup of a person's gut microbiome was linked to their levels of active vitamin D, a hormone, which is important for bone health and immunity.
Yeah.
This was published in November 26, 2020 in Nature Communications.
Oh, that's a pretty highfalutin journal.
Yeah.
That's a very fancy journal.
Yeah. So vitamin D can take several forms, but standard blood tests detect only one, an inactive precursor that could be stored.
25-hydroxyvitamin D.
Right. So it needs to be metabolized to become an active form. We were surprised to find that microbiome diversity, the variety of types of bacteria in the gut, was closely associated with active vitamin D.
Okay. Well, so we now know that the oral vitamin D you take has to go through a couple of biotransformations to become the active business end of vitamin D, which is 125-hydroxyvitamin D.
In two primary organs. That's where it takes place.
The liver and the kidney.
The liver and the kidney.
But it has to go from the liver to the kidney. It has to get to the liver. It has to go from the liver.
Yeah.
So it's possible the microbiome may be involved in that.
Right.
Yep.
So multiple studies suggest that people with low vitamin D levels have a higher risk of cancer, heart disease, worse COVID-19 infections and other diseases.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that large randomized clinical trials with more than 25,000 adults concluded that taking vitamin D supplements has no effect on health outcomes.
Okay. What was that, the final word on that?
Yeah, no, that's not the final word. And that's why they're saying our study suggests that this might be because these studies measured only the precursor form of vitamin D rather than the active form. And that maybe it has to do with microbiome as well.
Oh, okay.
So that was I suppose, kind of interesting. Gut microbiomes are really complex. They vary a lot from person to person, says one of the researchers. When we do find associations, they aren't usually as distinct as what we found here.
Okay. To be continued.
To be continued.
To see where, they, where they're going with this research, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They used an RNA sequencing to identify and quantify types of bacteria in each stool sample based on unique genetic modifiers.
That's the high throughput analysis that used to be thousands of dollars. Now it's very inexpensive to do. And they can do a lot of research to determine what bacteria are in the gut.
Yeah.
So diversity, diversity, diversity.
Exactly. What was very interesting is that in addition to discovering a link between active vitamin D and overall microbiome diversity, the researchers also noted that 12 particular types of bacteria appeared more often in gut microbiomes in men with lots of active vitamin D.
Oh, okay.
Most of those 12 bacteria produce butyrate.
Oh.
A very important for short-chain fatty acids producing butyrate for the health of the gut.
So what that says is it's not about vitamin D. It's about the bacteria
that
do other things besides that are healthy, besides help vitamin D metabolism.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, it's
that
also,
could almost be called a confounder if they're looking at butyrate in the periphery there.
Could it be that vitamin D in some way feeds or fosters a healthier microbiome? You know, there may be some microbiome effects of vitamin D. That's certainly likely to be the case.
Yeah.
That it, you know, I don't believe that gut microbiome, that gut microorganisms synthesize vitamin D.
No.
Unlike vitamin K.
Yeah.
And unlike folate and unlike some things that get, and we now know that there is a species of probiotic that can synthesize glutathione. It's the ME3 in RegActive. It synthesizes glutathione. So some of these bacteria synthesize beneficial compounds like butyrate and or vitamins.
Yeah.
But whether these things make vitamin D, I don't think they make vitamin
D.
But vitamin D may be, the vitamin D metabolism may be influenced by
exactly. It. And one of the researchers says it matters how well your body is able to metabolize that vitamin D, whether you get it from the sun or a supplement, into the active form.
No question.
And maybe that's what clinical trials need to measure in order to get a more accurate picture of the vitamin's role. You need a well-functioning liver and kidney for that to happen, to get the active form, because it is a hormone. So, interesting. But
so here's the other problem.
Yeah.
The other problem is just because you have enough of the active metabolite vitamin D doesn't mean it works. Because of the vitamin D receptor.
Yes.
And there's a whole set of reactions that have to occur.
There are genetic SNPs about that for vitamin D receptor.
Some people have very poor VDR receptors. And therefore, they're not able to. They have what ostensibly looks like good levels of vitamin D, but the vitamin D isn't doing its job within the cells in so many, in hundreds of different reactions that occur in the cells that are fostered and facilitated by vitamin D.
Yeah.
So it's complicated.
Yeah. So Gene sent us this article. Thank you, Gene.
Mm-hmm.
But Gene is wondering, what is the best way to increase microbiome diversity?
Right. That's the $64,000
question.
There's even stress effects and exercise effects on diversity. But
absolutely.
Mostly it's about diet and prebiotics. You know, certain beneficial insoluble fibers.
Right. Prebiotic foods like asparagus and Jerusalem artichoke and leeks and other onions and almonds. And there's lots of kiwi prebiotic foods like that that are beneficial. And all of the probiotic foods.
I just made a frittata. Instead of using potatoes, I used artichokes.
Yum.
Basil, lots of spinach.
Mm-hmm.
You're sort of a green frittata with like a dozen eggs. But instead of potatoes, because I didn't want all the carbs, I used a jar of artichokes.
Very nice.
A glass jar.
A glass jar. Good.
Because I didn't want...
Shouldn't be a plastic jar.
I didn't want a plastic jar. I didn't want a can.
Right. You didn't want it. Exactly.
I didn't want... I got the can lining, so it was like...
Very good.
$11 of artichokes.
Well, there you go.
But healthy.
Throw the rest in your salad. That's good.
And dried tomatoes.
Dried tomatoes,
dried tomatoes.
Yeah. Lovely. That sounds delicious. A red and green omelet.
I think I'm going to go back and, after we do this, I'm going to go back and have a snack of that.
There you go.
just a little bit of feta cheese on top.
Yes. Yeah. For flavor. It's nice. Yes. It's good.
All right. So our microbiomes are going to be happy.
Yes. And let's remind everyone of the destination for questions.
Radioprogram@AOL.com. And we need a full mail basket before next week. I'm sure we will attain that, thanks to you, our dedicated listeners.
Everybody's sleepy because of the cold weather, and they're getting ready for holidays and
we'll hunker down
so forth and
think
so
of some
on.
Questions.
Yeah, send it to us.
Yep. Thank you, Layla.
Thanks,
and
Dr.
everybody
Hoffman.
Out there, stay safe.
Yes.
And we'll have more issues to share with you next week. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is our weekly Q&A with Layla, part of our Intelligent Medicine podcast series.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.